You know the Cinderella story. You know what it's going to be. Okay, that's an archetype. Now, we have archetypal characters. There are lots. There's more than we can handle today. So we're just going to touch on a few. The main one, the first one, the most important one, is the hero. Okay, the hero is a complicated person. The first thing you need to understand is that hero is a mask that this character is wearing. All of these archetypes are masks that characters wear. Because if you have more than one person in a story, you have more than one story. Do you understand? Every person in a situation, in a story, is the hero of their own story. And so if you have a situation that you want to write about, how do you decide who your hero is in the story? You've got your situation, you've got your setting. Who is your hero? How do you decide?
I would think the protagonist, wouldn't it?
But who's the protagonist?
Oh, okay.
You
have to
decide that, don't you?
How do you decide? Think about, I'm going to use Star Wars a lot, Star Wars and Harry Potter, because everybody knows it. Everybody knows these stories. Okay, think about the situation of Star Wars. Who are your characters there? You've got Luke, you've got Obi-Wan, you've got Darth Vader, you've got Princess Leia, Han Solo. I can't translate Wookiee. Okay.
Isn't the hero the one that solves the problem in the end?
Potentially, but what's the problem? See, because what I'm trying to say is that you've got these different characters. If the story is told from Luke's point of view, as the movie is, it's one story. But if you tell the story from Obi-Wan's point of view, it becomes a different story. If you tell it from Han Solo's point of view, it becomes a different story. That's the point I'm trying to make, is that you have to choose, when you're writing your story, who your hero is, dependent on what the story is that you want to tell. I mean, you've got this situation. How do you decide? You decide because the story that you want to tell is the story of a young man overcoming difficulties, finding his purpose, finding his strength, and overcoming opposition. That's the story you want to tell. So that's Luke's story. So Luke becomes the hero. Okay? So Luke puts on the hero mask. Now there's more than one kind of hero. The first kind is the willing hero. What's the willing hero?
The one that steps in and says, I can help with this. I'll do my part.
Right? He's self-motivated. There's another hand.
Yeah, that was me. Self-motivated.
Okay. He's self-motivated. He's the one that stands up and says, yes, I can do this. I'm going to go. I'm going to do it. Okay. What about this one? The unwilling hero. Who is he? Harry Potter, Luke Skywalker. The unwilling hero is a very common one. The normal person going about their everyday business who, because of circumstances, is forced out of their normal life into the story and has to overcome. Okay? That's your unwilling hero. Now you've got the anti-hero. There are two kinds. The first one is the wounded. Your wounded anti-hero is the good person with flaws. The knight in tarnished armor. The person who wants to be good but struggles. Okay, this is Batman. Okay? Then you've got the tragic. The tragic anti-hero is potential squandered. It's the person who had the opportunity to do something, but because of their flaws, they failed. That's Macbeth. Okay? Okay, now, after you've got those three, you choose, is your hero group-oriented? Your group-oriented hero is part of a tribe. The adventure forces him to leave his tribe, to go out into the world alone and have his adventure. And at the end of his adventure, he comes home. He comes back to his group. He wants to be back with his tribe. This is Frodo in The Lord of the Rings. Okay? He's happy where he is. He doesn't want to leave. Events force him away from his people. And all he wants to do for that whole story is come home.
Did you give an example of the willing hero? I might have missed that.
I didn't give a specific example.
Oh, okay.
It's just the go-getter.
Okay. just give one for everything else. I missed it.
I didn't even have one for
okay.
him because he's just so perky.
Okay.
Okay. And then you've got the loner hero. He's the opposite of the group-oriented hero. He's the guy who lives out on the fringes, who isn't part of the tribe. And his adventure forces him to come temporarily into the group. He does his job, he saves the day, and then he leaves again because he doesn't belong with the tribe. That's the Lone Ranger. Okay? The last one is the Catalyst. Anybody know enough chemistry to be able to tell me what a catalyst is?
It's what makes it go. Gets everything started.
Okay. A catalyst in chemistry starts a chain reaction of some sort, but does not change itself. Okay? So, your catalyst hero comes onto the scene, causes a reaction, causes change, but does not change himself. Sherlock Holmes. Okay? Any of your mystery solving kind of detective, that sort of a person. I had another one, but I lost it now.
Poirot.
Okay. Huh?
Poirot.
Poirot. James Bond. That's the one I was thinking of. Okay. James Bond never changes. He's always the same. But he comes in. He's the hero. He does his job. He saves the world. He's exactly the same James Bond at the end. Okay. It's not true that every hero has an arc, because his is just a line. Okay.
Just happening.
What separates a hero from a main character? What changes a main character into a hero? What's the difference?
They do something to help.
What?
They do something to help.
Good. Okay. But what's that heroic thing?
I think it's like when they start affecting the world around them.
Okay.
Because, like, you know, all the different heroes, Batman, Superman, they start affecting their area, and then from there it kind of spreads out to other, I mean, like Justice League and all those other different organizations that form because of heroes that stand up, like Superman coming up with the jail or whatever.
What do all heroes have in common?
Except Harry Potter.
Except, you never know.
I was going to say, could it have to do with sacrifice? Like
exactly. Okay, to make a hero, you have to have sacrifice. That person has to be willing to give something up, and that something has to be important. They have to be willing to sacrifice their life, their health, their girlfriend, their social life, whatever it is, something that's important to them, they give it up for the good of the whole or for the good of an ideal. And that's what separates the main characters from the heroes. Okay. We're going to play Name That Archetype. First of all, I'm going to tell you what they are. Okay, I'm going to give you the most common set of archetypes that go with the hero, not the only one. And in this, remember that gender and archetypes is neutral, okay? There's heroes, there's heroines, there's female mentors, there's male mentors. We're not gender specific on this. Okay, so first you've got the hero. Hero has to have a mentor. What's a mentor? Someone who teaches them. Someone who helps. Someone who provides them with guidance. The mentor also has the job of giving to the hero some sort of help, something that they will carry with them as they go into the adventure. Think about Obi-Wan Kenobi giving Luke the lightsaber, okay? The mentor's job is to teach and to give this gift, okay? Then there's a threshold guardian. Any ideas on that one? Anybody?
I guess like the line between the villains and the heroes or something. Because it's kind of like the line threshold, I mean, I'm just guessing from the name.
Okay, like take. Okay, you shall not pass, all right? This is your threshold guardian. He stands there and he says to the hero, this is a bad idea. You shouldn't do this. Either because he's concerned about the hero or because he doesn't want the hero to get involved. He can be a good guy or a bad guy, but his job is to try and stop him.
Kind of like the voice of reason?
Sometimes the voice of reason, when you're about to do something crazy, is a definite threshold guardian. Okay? It'll make more sense when I give you some examples. The herald. What's a herald?
Someone who brings you news.
Okay. The herald is the one who comes to the hero at some point early in the story and announces that their normal life is over and that their adventure is about to begin. Okay. The shapeshifter. What do you think about that one? Anybody? Good, yes. Someone who seems to change from the point of view of the hero. Remember, again, that these are masks that the people are wearing. They are, I mean, the mentor is only the mentor from the point of view of the hero. From the point of view of the mentor, he's his own hero. From the point of view of the herald, the mentor is some guy that lives next door. I mean, these things shift around. All of these people are wearing these roles because that's where the hero sees them. Okay, that's an important thing to understand. The shapeshifter is someone who changes. The shadow, who's he or she? He's a bad guy. But he's a very specific kind of bad guy. The shadow represents what the hero could have been if he had walked a different path. The shadow is the hero's bad side, the hero's part of him that he doesn't want to think about, his evil twin, you know? Okay, and then you've got allies, that's easy. And then there's the trickster. Trickster isn't in all stories. When he is, sometimes he's a shapeshifter as well. But the trickster's job is kind of comic relief. Okay?
All right. Okay, Harry Potter.
You're up. Oh.
Stories. Oh, I see. Star Wars. Because we all love it. We know we do. Lord of the Rings. And Sherlock Holmes. These were chosen because they're real clear examples and everybody knows them. Okay? There's nothing specific to them other than the fact that they're very well known. So, who's the hero in Harry Potter?
Harry Potter.
Who's the hero in Star Wars? Who's the hero in Lord of the Rings? Who's the hero in Sherlock Holmes? All right, now the mentor.
Dumbledore.
Most of the time.
Yeah, because sometimes it's a...
It's like a large group of
different mentors.
That mask is shifting around a lot in Harry Potter. At the very beginning of the first book, who's the mentor? Before Dumbledore even shows up, who's the mentor?
Hagrid.
Okay. Who's the mentor in Star Wars?
Then Yoda.
Okay, then Yoda later on. Who's the mentor here?
Gandalf. And to some extent, Bilbo.
Good. Okay, and Sherlock. Trickier. Who can get
Watson?
No, not the mentor.
What?
Trivia question.
Sherlock.
Mycroft. Sherlock's older brother. Mm-hmm. The only person in the world smarter than him. Okay. Who's the threshold guardian just in the first of the Harry Potter stories? Who stands there when Harry's adventure is about to begin and says, no, you can't go?
Never.
Who?
Neville Longbottom.
Okay, before that, right at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, there's
the
uncle.
The Dursleys, good. Okay. Who is the threshold guardian in Star Wars?
Uncle Owen.
Ben. Or no, Uncle Owen. Ben. Whatever.
Okay, Uncle Owen says, no, this is a bad idea, don't do it. Don't get involved with that. Stay away from that Obi-Wan guy. He's no, don't do it. Lord of the Rings, who's the threshold guardian? According to my son, who is my resident Lord of the Rings expert, the other hobbits.
Because
it was just against their culture.
Yeah. All the other hobbits said, you're going to do what?
What?
Yeah. They said, stay here where it's safe and you're happy. Don't go out there. It's dangerous. They were the threshold guardians. Okay, for Sherlock Holmes, threshold guardian. No, not yet. Who stands in front of Sherlock and says, you can't do this? Who?
I don't know her name. Is it a girl?
No.
Is it the police?
Yeah, the police. Let's drive. Sherlock, this is police business. Get out of it. Okay. The herald in Harry Potter.
Hagrid.
And here? Who came and delivered the first message to Luke?
R2-D2.
You guys are good at this. How about here?
Gandalf.
It was Gandalf again, And here. This is a tricky one again. I had fun with Sherlock.
comes to Sherlock Holmes and lets him know that the adventure is beginning?
First one asking him for help?
What starts the story? The victim.
Oh,
okay. The victim starts the story. Okay. Now, the shapeshifter. See if you can get this one. Who's the shapeshifter in Harry Potter stories?
Snape.
Is he good? Is he bad? Is he good? Is he bad?
Yes.
Draco, kind of to an extent, too.
Huh?
Draco, because he's kind of like...
To an extent.
And serious.
But he's just an enemy.
Yes, but everybody's playing their own role in Harry's story. And there doesn't have to be, as we said earlier, there doesn't have to be just one mentor.
Yeah.
There doesn't have to be just one shapeshifter. But this is just to give you an idea. Okay, who is the shapeshifter in Star Wars?
Vader.
No.
Han. No.
It wouldn't be Han.
No. Okay, there's not that many more characters.
Leia.
Yeah.
I mean, she starts out as a love interest and then turns into what? You don't get much more shifty than that. Okay, how about here? This one's kind of tricky too. And if you can't do it, let me go. Huh?
Oh,
oh
who
what's
said?
His name? Boromir?
They did get
it. You were right.
Okay, now Boromir is a very good example of something that you need to understand about what we were talking about with these people wearing these masks in reference to how the hero is seeing them. Okay, the hero, Frodo, sees Boromir as a shapeshifter. How does Boromir see himself?
He's the hero.
He's the hero of his story. He, in his mind, to himself, he is completely consistent from one end to the other. Frodo fails to see that. And so because of Frodo's not being able to see him as who he was, he appears as a shapeshifter. It's not about him. It's about him. Okay? Sherlock Holmes, who's the shapeshifter? You guys don't have enough Holmes. You need more Holmes.
I know
I'm
not. No. Moriarty is it?
No, he's the shadow. The suspects. The suspects. Did they do it? Was it somebody else? Are they innocent?
Moriarty.
Okay, now the shadow. Who's the shadow in Harry Potter? Voldemort. That's easy.
Now, does it always end up that the shadow is also the villain?
We're going to talk about that when we get to Lord of the Rings. Okay. Who's here?
Vader.
Another good point with Vader and about this, the mask thing. If you look at Star Wars just by itself, one movie, Luke is the hero. Vader's the shadow. If you take the entire series as one story, mm-hmm. Vader is the hero. Mm-hmm. It's his story, start to finish. From his beginning, to his failure, to his ultimate redemption. I just blew your mind, didn't I? Okay.
Spoiler.
So, it all depends on whose point of view you're working from. Okay. Who's the shadow in Lord of the Rings?
Sméagol. No. Yeah, Sméagol.
Gollum.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Everybody thinks that because Sauron?
Yes.
Is the bad guy? That he's the shadow. But he's not. He's not, because he has nothing to do with Frodo. Frodo has no connection with him at all. But Gollum is everything that Frodo could become if he let himself. And so Gollum is the shadow. Okay? Sorry, what?
Sauron was in control of the ring. Gollum and Frodo don't have that control of the ring, so it's eating away at them.
Okay. You are good. So that answers the question. The shadow is not always the main villain in the story. The shadow is a direct reference to the hero. Okay, Sherlock Holmes.
Moriarty.
Okay, ally. All of them kind of shift in and out of that role.
Yeah.
I put in R2-D2 and C-3PO because they're there the whole time.
The whole time.
Why not Jar Jar Binks?
We don't say that.
Jar Jar.
Okay. Lord of the Rings, the allies.
Sam.
Samwise Gamgee for the win. Okay. Finally, you get to use that Watson. Okay, now the trickster. I don't have. There's no trickster in Sherlock Holmes. There's no funny there. Okay. But for the Harry Potter, Fred George.
Oh, Fred George.
Who exists pretty much for comic relief. Okay, how about here?
C-3PO.
Now break out your.
No.
Han Solo.
Really?
First original Star Wars. Come on.
He's a funny guy. How about here?
Mary
and Pippin.
There's no fun in Sherlock.
No fun.
But couldn't C-3PO be a lot too? Because just there's so many times where he's just doing all the. There's nothing serious about his role. I don't know. I guess. I guess it could be both.
Then shift around. Everything moves. Okay. Does this give you an idea of what we're working with here? Okay. You can pick these out of your own stories. You can pick them out of other stories. You can see them at work once you know how to see them. It's like my husband, when he was a teenager, he worked as a projectionist in an old theater where they used several reels for the film. Okay. And he taught me how to see the projectionist cues. There are these little dots that flash up there that tell the projectionist when to start the next reel. Once you learn how to see them, you cannot unsee them. They're there. So, you know, I'm watching old movies on TV and it's like, once you learn to see the archetypes, they're everywhere. Okay. Yeah, let me see if I can figure out where I am. How much time do we have left?
Approximately 20. Yeah.
Oh, we're on schedule. That's fantastic. Okay, now that you understand the archetype of characters, we're going to talk about the hero's journey. Now, this is a very old pattern. This is a pattern of adventure that has existed for thousands of years. I wish these things were like Magna Doodles. This is a classic three-act play, The Adventure of the Hero. Okay. In the beginning, the hero is in the ordinary world. I don't write very well sideways. Okay, this is his everyday life. Life is ticking along just as it always has. When, all of a sudden, he receives a call to adventure. From the Herald. Refusal. Refusal of the call. Either by the hero himself, if he's a reluctant hero, or the threshold guardian. Okay? But then he meets the mentor. And receives aid. Okay. Luke Skywalker. Complaining because he wants to go to Tashi Station. R2-D2 shows up. He has to clean R2-D2. He finds the video of Leia. He goes to talk to Uncle Owen, and he says, hey, I found this thing about Obi-Wan. Uncle Owen says, stay away from him. He's crazy. But because the droids run away, R2-D2 runs away, they go after him. He meets with Obi-Wan Kenobi. They talk, and he receives the lightsaber. Okay? That's the end of Act 1. Beginning of Act 2, the hero crosses the threshold. It's the point of no return. He's committed. Okay? He leaves Obi-Wan Kenobi, tells him he can't help him, sorry, goes home, finds that Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru have been barbecued. Life is over as he knew it. He might as well go off and have an adventure. Okay? He's committed. The next thing that happens to the hero is tests. He makes allies. And he makes enemies. Obi-Wan and Luke Skywalker head off to Mos Eisley. Where? He runs into the crazy guys in the bar, he meets Han Solo and Chewbacca, and they get the attention of the rebel forces as they're trying to leave.
It's actually
the Empire. Sorry. I'm so glad you're here because you're great.
I love Star Wars.
Okay. So, after they leave, they go off. They approach the inmost cave. Okay? Tell me what that is.
Death Star.
It's not a star. It's a space station. Okay?
What do you mean by that? They approach the inmost.
They have to go, it's like into the belly of the beast. Okay? The hero is committed to the adventure. He's tested. He's passed the test. He's got friends. He's got enemies. Now they have to go into battle. They have to walk forward. They have to progress. They have to face the bad guy.
So is that like when Frodo and Sam leave the rest of the Fellowship? Would that be
good?
Approaching?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. After you approach the inmost cave, there is the ordeal. Okay? In Star Wars, what's the ordeal? Not yet.
That's a big ordeal.
Okay. They have to go and they have to break in. They have to rescue the princess. They have to be smashed in the trash compactor. They have to get away. And in the end, Obi-Wan gets killed by Darth Vader, okay? So, this is the ordeal. It's a point of of major action in the story, major tension, okay? If you look at this as a year of school, which Harry Potter likes to do, the ordeal is the midterm exam. Okay? So you've come through all of this, and the ordeal is a test. If you pass this test, you continue forward. Okay, after the ordeal, there's a reward. After they have the ordeal, they get away. They have achieved their objective. What was their objective at that point? Rescue the princess. They've got her. They got away. The price was high because Obi-Wan died. But they have the reward. That's the end of Act Two. It is not the end of the story. Okay, Act Three. The road back. These are kind of confusing, their names, so we're going to talk about them more in detail. The resurrection. And return with the elixir. Okay. Talk about Act Three. Why the story isn't over yet when you get to here. The road back represents another threshold. It's another door to pass through. You've gotten this far, you pass through again. There's usually some sort of a turning point in the story. There's an escalation. The stakes are higher now. Okay, if you think about a James Bond movie, this is the point where James Bond's life is in danger. Okay? This is the point where the entire world is in danger because they're going to detonate a nuclear bomb. Okay? There's escalation at this point.
Would that be considered the climax?
The climax is the resurrection. This is the build. Okay? This point is the build to the climax. It's a time of redirection, of recommitment. If we go back to Star Wars again, where are we in the story now?
On the base where they're getting ready to attack the base.
On the base where they're getting ready. Okay? They're getting ready. They know that they have to go. Because now they know that the Death Star can destroy planets, okay? And they cannot allow them to continue to have that much power. And they know they are going to have to go and destroy the Death Star. They know they are probably going to die. This is the point of tension.
So would you say that Act Two, the ordeal and all that, kind of prepares them for the bigger one?
Exactly.
In terms of their mental state, mm-hmm. maybe their even their physical or magical capacity or
yes.
something like that.
Yes. The ordeal is a test that prepares for this last test. Okay. This is the point of highest tension in the story. This is where you want your readers on the edge of their seat. This is where it's 4:00 in the morning, they have to go to work the next day, but they are not going to put that book down to save their lives. Okay? They've got to finish it. And then comes the resurrection. The hero has to face death. Now, if you have a romance going on, there's no shoot-em-outs, there's no bloodthirsty villain, it's just a romance. How does the hero face death in that?
Heartbreak.
Heartbreak. He might lose the girl. Okay? That's the point where it seems like he's completely blown it and it's over. Okay, you're familiar with that point in the movies. It's all lost. There's nothing left. And then at the end, it's all okay, usually. But there has to be some sort of facing death. either literally or symbolically.
So this is the moment of sacrifice.
This is the moment of sacrifice. This is where the hero is either going to live or die. If the hero lives, then it's a happy ending. If the hero dies honorably and maintains his heroic status, then it's a tragic, sad ending. But he's still the hero. Okay. Are any of you, I don't know if you're even old enough, but are you familiar with the movie of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid? Anybody? Okay. The end of that movie, I can't even deal with that. I have to turn it off. Because it's just so terrible, you know? But they live on. Your hero, even your tragic hero that dies, is resurrected. That's why it's still called the resurrection. Because the tragic hero lives on in the hearts and minds of their adoring friends and family. And the readers. Okay. So even if they die, they're resurrected. Okay. And we talked about how it can be a symbolic death of their old self. Okay.
We're at 3:29.
Huh? 3:29. Okay.
We're getting close.
I think you're doing wonderful.
Okay.
So would the return with the elixir, would that be basically where it just shows that the problem is now solved kind of thing, or that
not
resolution?
Quite. Okay, so where we talked about the ordeal being the midterm exam, the resurrection is the final exam. Okay, this is where we make sure that everything that the hero learned back here really took. Okay? That the person has really changed. With Star Wars, what's going on? Okay, they're attacking the Death Star.
Oh, yeah.
Almost everyone else is dead. Luke Skywalker's the only one left. He only has one bomb. He has to drop it in exactly the right spot. His targeting computer is down. And what does he do?
He uses the Force.
Obi-Wan's voice over his back shoulder going, "Use the Force, Luke." And he turns off and he uses the Force. He makes that step. He is a Jedi now. Okay? Return with the elixir is it's the resolution of the story. It's where all of the loose ends get tied up. There are two potential story forms. There's the circular. Okay. In a circular story form, the hero starts here. He goes out. He comes back. He returns to where he was. But he's changed. Okay? Now, like with Frodo, it was literal. Okay? He goes out from the Shire, he comes back to the Shire. It does not have to be literal. You can get this idea of coming full circle into your story by echoing something that happened at the beginning. Even if it's just really subtle, like a line of dialogue or an image or something that will signal to the reader that we're back where we began, that this story is over. You've gone all the way around the circle and the story is done. The hero may continue. The story may go on from that point, but this story is finished. Okay? The other story is the open-ended. With that one, you know, there's just the hero goes out and you get to the end of the story. And all of your loose ends aren't necessarily tied up. And there isn't necessarily and they all lived happily ever after. Things are a little more ambiguous. Maybe they'll be okay, maybe they won't. Maybe things worked out, maybe they didn't.
It's kind of Doctor Who.
Doctor Who goes forever. Do we have Doctor Who fans in here? Talk to your doctor. Okay.
Sometimes it's cool.
Okay. So with an open-ended story, you've got ambiguity at the end. With a circular story, you have a definite close, a definite tying up. Okay? There's a time and a place for each of these. And it depends entirely on your story, your hero, and what you're trying to accomplish. I can't tell you which one is right for you. That's something that you have to decide for yourself. But these are the two possibilities. Okay, the elixir. We're getting there. Try not to have to erase everything. Okay, the elixir is the holy grail of the story. It's the thing that the hero had to find. Okay? Now, with Luke Skywalker, the hero had to find what? Did he have to find Leia? Did he have to find Darth Vader? What was the story about?
Himself.
He had to find himself. He had to find his confidence. He had to believe that he was a Jedi. Okay? So, the Holy Grail is what the story was really about. Okay? There's several different kinds of elixir. There's the elixir of love. Okay? The hero ends the story having won the love of the person that he was trying to get. He has to have earned that love, okay, for it to be the holy grail of the story. The next one helps if I have the right card. It's the elixir of change. The hero goes out and he brings back change. Change for himself, change for his society, change for the entire universe. Depending on your story, change is the elixir that he brings back. Okay? There is the elixir of responsibility. Okay, the hero goes out, he has his adventure, he comes back ready to take his place. Okay, this is Luke Skywalker. He's gone out, he has become a Jedi. He comes back and he is ready to be the Jedi that his people need him to be. Okay, he has the elixir of responsibility. Okay, the elixir of tragedy. How does that one work? Got an idea?
Well, the Sundance Kid, and I mean, that was a tragedy at the end, but I guess it was the end. It was a elixir for the police. Because they didn't have to
They felt
anymore.
Better. Nobody else did. Okay.
Is it kind of like the hero has to die to save everybody? He makes the ultimate sacrifice?
Yes, but you have to get something from that.
Well, like in Armageddon?
When you have the tragedy, the elixir is kind of a cautionary tale.
Oh, I see.
Kind of a what not to do.
Kind of like Romeo and Juliet?
Yes.
Good.
Okay, last one is the elixir of wisdom. Okay? The hero goes out, he gains wisdom, he comes back, and he shares it. Who is the tribe? Who is he sharing the elixir with?
The wisdom one?
Any of them. Who is this being shared with?
The reader.
Good. Okay? This is the point where you are, your hero is bringing the elixir back to the reader and sharing what we have gained. What was the point of this adventure? What was the point of the story? Without doing this part, your reader will end with an emptiness, a feeling of incompletion. You have to make sure that this is here. It doesn't have to be, well, and the moral of our story is, okay? But it needs to be there. It's the completion, okay? All right. You did it. Does anybody have any questions after that huge amount of information?
How many novels have you written?
I have two finished, one, two, three in process.
And how long have you
been? How long have I been? Between 90 and 100.
What if the writer doesn't follow this? Like, what if they just write it off the wall, totally
straight story? That's the glory of it. You can do it however you want. These are just a tool.
This is a tried and true.
Yes, this is just a way that it has been done anciently. But it is just a tool. You don't have to do it. You don't have to do it this way. You can shift things around. You can use parts. You can pick what you choose. It's like having a really big toolbox with all kinds of tools for woodworking and electrical work and plumbing and all that. You go to do a job, you don't need all of those tools for the job, unless you're building a whole house. But you know, you don't use all your tools every time. You just take out what you need for the job that you have to do. Okay? So if you feel like using the archetypes brings something to your story that wasn't there before, then by all means use it. But if it doesn't feel natural to you, you're not comfortable with it, it doesn't make sense, don't feel like you have to use it. Okay? It's just a tool that you can use. I wanted to point out with Harry Potter, how Harry Potter works on this, okay? This is the first part of the first book, okay? And then you got the first book, second book, third book, fourth book, fifth book, sixth book, seventh book to the end, okay? So she just repeated this little bit over and over again until she got to the point where she was ready for this. Just give you an idea of how, if you want to do a big, massive series, how you can make that work. Anything else?
Yes. Awesome.
And if this is something that really excites you, really intrigues you, there is so much more information out there. There's plenty of stuff on the internet. There's books that will help you. Like I said at the beginning, there's no way that we can cover all of the depths and nuances of this in this 50 minutes. Okay? So if it does appeal to you, by all means, go out and look for more information. Thank you for